Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Well, welcome everybody to a very special edition of Inside College Soccer. This is our junior college edition, and we have gathered together, I have with me four of the top junior college coaches in the country at various levels in various locations. So everybody's going to get a chance to hear what things are like in the Southwest and on the East Coast and in California. And I'm excited about this one. So I'm your host today, Don Williams. I work for Sports Recruiting USA, and I coached in junior college for 10 of my 22 years coaching. My last gig was at Feather River College in California. We operate under the NJCAA D3 rules, which means in California, we have no scholarships to give. And my last job that I had. And I did that for 8 years, coaching the men and the women simultaneously. And today with me, I've got some other coaches. So I'm going to let you guys each introduce yourself, because there's four of you. I'm going to start with you, Pepe, if you don't mind. Why don't you introduce yourself? Give us a quick idea of your background. And yeah.
Yeah, my name is Pepe Aragon. I coach at Herkimer College and just completed my 24th season as the head coach at Herkimer. I'm the current president of the NJCAA Men's Soccer Coaches Association and have been blessed to have won 7 national championships. And like I said, I can't believe it's my 24th season doing this. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, Pepe, you know, I first found about you because I was chasing you. That's how I first found out the name. Like, who's this Herkimer guy over there in New York? And on the men's side, I was always chasing, trying to catch you. I never was able to get to number 2 right behind you, but never were able to catch you. You've done an amazing job there.
Thank you.
Sal, how are you, man?
Good, good. It's been I'm the head women's coach at Monroe Community College in Rochester, New York. I'm on the East Coast with Pep. I was actually, I remember when Pepe got the job at as the head coach, I was the assistant at Genesee Community College on the men's side. So it's funny because, I've been here for 14 years at Monroe Community College, but I've been coaching for about 24 years, just like Pepe. And so I've been all over the country. I started the women's program at Junior College Division III down in Texas at Cedar Valley College. And then I was down in Arizona for 2.5 years at Mesa Community College doing the men's. I was a head men's coach there, assistant women's. In Texas, I was a head women's coach. And I've been here for 14 years. Fortunately, I have not won as many national championships as Pep. But, we win our region. We do well nationally. We're always in the top 10. And we've got a couple players right now that are playing for professional teams and national teams. I've got the starting center mid for Switzerland right now in Kumba So, the one player that killed it with our striking force, 55 goals in our 20 game seasons now. She's she's on the national team for Nigeria and plays for Real Betis in Spain. So we get the talent that comes through the junior college ranks. And I'm a former past president for the NJCAA Women's Coaches Association as well.
Well, great to have you. No offense, guys. Next up is one of my favorite people in the world. We've coached against each other many, many times. I don't think I've ever gotten the best of you, Adrian. I think you always smacked us around pretty good. You got some pretty good teams you've had. Adrian Sorensen, how are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm really excited to be here. I'm Adrian Sorensen. I coach at San Joaquin Delta Community College in Stockton, California. We're NJCAA Division III. So no scholarship here, but I've been here since 2010. So just finished my 12th season with the program. Started here as a head coach when I was 22. And it's been kind of a slow journey getting it to where it is. But over the last 5 or so years, we've had quite a bit of success and a couple of Final Fours recently back to back. And then, you know, as well as winning the conference the last 2 seasons back to back. So, yeah, but the biggest thing for me is just moving the kids onto the next level. That's definitely the top priority. Helping them with scholarships and just building better people. So yeah, but excited to be here.
Thanks, Adrian, for coming in with us. I appreciate it. Christian, how are you, brother?
Doing well. How are you doing, Don?
Good. You better bring your game because this was your idea, brother.
Well, I always tell everyone that, you know, don't be the smartest person in the room if you want to grow and you want to become better. So I went out and found the people that I thought would actually help me become a better version of who I am, because they're all fantastic coaches and I've been blessed to be able to work with them over the last few years. I have a little bit of a different path than they might have. I am on my 26th year of coaching college soccer. So this year starts number 26 year for me. Much like our young lady from California, I was a head start being a head coach at the age of 23 and have been blessed to be in this game for the last, you know, 26 years coaching it. My most recent stop now is at Paradise Valley Community College, where I'm the head men's and women's soccer coach for Paradise Valley, which is a unique challenge in doing both teams. In terms of national championships, you know, Paradise Valley Community College, I think Sal, they beat you a couple of times in the national tournaments at one point, has won 3 national championships, has been in the national tournament 6 times in the last 10 years. The men's program hasn't been as successful, has struggled, and part of it was just coming in and really understanding what the makeup was. And now our men's program was nationally ranked this year, finishing 14th in the nation. So, you know, we've got a lot of history and we've got, you know, top programs. I can tell you in my experience and watching that Arizona is one of the top junior college conferences in the country in terms of where we are at and playing and having some of the toughest programs, and that there's been more national championships coming out of the Arizona conference than any other conference in the country. So you're talking about a very high level of playing that happens here. Much like Pep and Sal, I've been blessed to also serve the organizations that I'm part of. So I'm the national chair for men's soccer on the All-American Committee and Ranking Committee for United Soccer Coaches. And I'm on the national chair for ranking and All-Americans for the NJCAA on the women's side. And that is at the Division II level. And I think that might be, you know, where we might want to start, Don, is just to understand what NJCAA Division I, Division II, and Division III really mean, so people have an understanding of what that means. And it's not necessarily, it's very similar to NCAA, but there's a couple of little changes that are in there.
Let me just do a quick rundown, because we have the NJCAA is the overall governing body for the country. However, underneath that, we have out in California, by the way, California has, I think it's 92 women's programs and 87 men's. 1/3 of all of the junior colleges in the United States exist in the state of California alone. And then up in Washington, Oregon, they have what they call the NWAC. And in California, they're all operating under the Division III rules, which means no scholarships. Now, Division II is an old division that got brought back a couple of years ago. And Division II in junior college means that they can basically pay your tuition and up to $250 in supplies, but they can't cover your housing and they can't cover your food. And Division I means basically they can cover it all if they want. And the most heavily funded programs in the country have up to, I think it's 24, right? 24 scholarships to give out. So, you know, when I hear families talk about how unaffordable education is in this country, I just say ridiculous. Most junior colleges in this country, not all of them, there's a couple back east, I think Connecticut maybe, super expensive. But the rest of them, It's pretty dirt cheap. Out in California, if you're a California resident, it's less than $2,000 a year for tuition, about $1,700, something like that, to take full units that you need to graduate and get your 60 units and move on to be a junior. So it's very inexpensive. A lot of states are free. In California now, as well as Florida, and I think quite a few other states now, it's free. So very inexpensive way to go, folks. Anything that I missed there, guys, that anybody wants to jump in on?
I think that, you know, that sums it up. The biggest difference that with, like you said, Division II is a new division that is come forward in NAJCAA, in that we as Division II schools can only offer the tuition and fees. And we have seen, I think to understand, we've actually seen a big change that's happening, that Division II junior college is going to be the largest division in junior college starting in 2023 with the reclassification that's happening with a number of schools.
Yeah, I guess the only other thing is when we talk about national champions, this is where Adrian and I start to bristle a little bit, because we start, California doesn't play all of the rest of the country, and vice versa. Travel, look, it's a lot of money to travel and to hold on other events. And we've got a limited amount of times before all the weather hits everywhere in the country. So it's a mythical national ranking, so to speak, but generally pretty doggone accurate, pretty close. The coaches all get together around the country and they all talk about it and they see each other's schedules. And every once in a while, teams will meet up and travel. And it's a very competitive group, men's and women's, across the nation. So let's start with the myth that I hear that, well, look, my kid has good grades. They don't need to go to junior college. Or junior college is beneath them. That kind of thought, like, ooh, junior college, the academics are substandard. And the way I always explained it to kids is, look, the first 2 years of any degree, whether it's Harvard, Stanford, or your local junior college, you're going to take English 101. You're going to take history. You're going to take math. And last I checked, you know, the Allied powers still beat the Axis powers in World War II, whether it's at Stanford or whether it's at your local junior college. So getting those basic classes out of the way, that everybody's got to take a health class and everybody's got to take a humanities class and everybody's got to take history classes. And you got to, there's some amazing professors at junior college. And I'm sure you guys got a couple of stories and a couple of things, but I know at my last junior college, I had PhD graduates from Harvard teaching at the local junior college. So what do you have to say about that, Pepe, when you hear people talk about academics at junior college like they're substandard?
Yeah, and here's the thing. You're right on the type of courses they take for the first 2 years. And when our guys move on, and you know, we've sent them to ACC schools and the Big East and the Big Ten, and there's zero issues with those credits that are transferring onto those schools. Like the majority of their credits, if not all, transfer onto those type of schools, you know. So I'm like, for example, right now I'm recruiting a kid who's top in his class and basically just didn't play for the right club. So he's a great player, but no one has seen him because he didn't have the money to pay for, you know, how much some of these top clubs are. So really no one knows about him, and I'm bringing him in so that he can get 2 great years here and then get onto a scholarship to a Division I school, you know. But it is talking his parents into the conversation you just said, that, yeah, you know, the type of classes he's going to take are going to transfer on to the, you know, those Division I, Division II schools with no issue.
Yeah. And Adrian, you know, out here in California, it's so big, isn't it? I mean, we're talking 92 women's programs, and we see a lot of kids, and I know you've got quite a few this year that are D1 kickbacks. Why don't you describe to us what that means and how that works, and how that works with credits and units and graduating, as well as some of the reasons maybe why kids are deciding that junior college wasn't such a bad idea after all?
Yeah, so right now when we started spring, we had three kids transfer in from Division One. I think that the four-year coaches are using the portal just as much as the kids are using the portal. They're pushing kids into the portal if something better is coming down the pipeline in their next class. And so I always, you know, find it funny when I like hear the four-year coaches, Division One coaches, you know, talking about how, you know, the portal is just ruining the game, when I see the four-year coaches using it just as much or more than the kids are using it. So yeah, I mean, I have three kids in right now that came to me from Division One schools. And so they're 4-2-4 transfers. So they come from a 4-year, they go to the 2-year, and then they're going back 4-year. To go back to Division One, they got to complete their associate's degree while they're here. But yeah, I mean, they come for all different reasons. You know, some of them are just, I'm finding, you know, learning all the same lessons that I think every kid learns as a freshman, having a really up and down season oftentimes. I have had two kids from one division school in particular, you know, kind of be told that something was going to happen if they played a certain number of minutes as a freshman. They both did that, and, you know, weren't kind of given what they were promised. So financially and life-wise, you know, they had to come back home. You know, it's just, it's all the things that you hear, but I think that going the community college route or going back to a top JC can really, for a lot of these kids, it really gets their love for the game back. They're able to come and kind of, you know, just reopen their recruiting, if that makes sense, rather than jump from one school to another school in the portal and kind of be in that desperate situation and just trying to find any school that will take them out of the portal. They come here and it kind of gives them that opportunity to reopen, you know, their recruiting. So, but yeah, I mean, we probably have 2-3 minimum Division One kids on our roster every year that bounce back from 4-year schools. I've had great experiences with those kids. I often hear like, well, they're bounce backs for a reason. And, you know, really set in a negative tone. And, you know, I just kind of balk at that because those kids, it's not even necessarily just about, you know, they're talented players and athletes, but, more than that, they've had these experiences that are really, you know, shaping them and could lead them, you know, one of two directions. And I think that they're awesome to have. Their perspective really carries through to the full group. They really appreciate what they have here, very much so. And I think they have a really positive impact overall on our group. It's not to say that they don't have any issues, but, you know, I've had great experiences with those kids overall.
Yeah, no. And, you know, they're able to transfer their academics over and then complete their units and then transfer out and be right on track to have 2 more years of eligibility at whatever next level is the right fit for them. Right. I think, I don't know, Sal, you've probably experienced some of this too, but you know, I think these kids have a certain dreamlike concept of what Division One is going to be. And then they get, you know, smacked around a little bit. It's not easy for an 18-year-old to move away from home and then suddenly be thrown in with a bunch of adult men or women that have been away from home for 3 or 4 years. And I think it can be overwhelming. What do you think, Sal?
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on what Adrian and Pepe said. So I'm an academic advisor here for our school. So I deal with the student athletes and the classes is what Pepe exactly said. We have very little issues of our classes transferring because, as you said, the first 2 years are the basic core courses. Doesn't matter if it's English 101 here or at Harvard, it's going to be the same English 101 class. So what we have found is what you're saying is I get those bounce back kids from Division One, like, or Division Two, that like Adrian said, and they go to those Division One schools. They think they've got this image of Division One and it's not what they want. It's not the right fit for them. They just went because of the prestige of it's Division One. I'm going to go play Division One. And that all of a sudden they realize it's not It's not what it's cracked up to be, or wasn't the right school, wasn't the right fit. You know, I read one, a post that you had put about the right fit, you know, for the school, if it's just the location, the program, the school, and then they come back to us. And after a year here, they're like, I don't know why I didn't come to junior college first.
Right.
Because we open up so many more doors. Yeah. And we get looked at by, you know, at least our program. And I know like Pepe's program and where we are as coaches, we have a lot of connections. You know, we've been around the game for 20 plus odd years. So we have all these connections. We can find, we know the player's personality because we get to know them and that I want to say, you know, individual basis, and we get to know our kids. So they come here and they're like, that wasn't the right fit. And they feel so much more comfortable here. And then we find them a school that's similar to the way we do things. So I think that's the biggest thing that I've noticed is they go and they may go blindly just on the prestige of Division I, you know, and not really thinking about it. Like, well, I'm playing Division I. What Division I are you playing at first? Where are they located? What, you know, like, are you still, you know, I've got a scholarship, where I love the student athletes that say, well, I got a scholarship. How much is it? Or how much are you still paying? Well, I'm still paying $35,000 to go to school. Like, well, it's not really a scholarship. You know, you can cut that. I can give you, come here for less than half of that and you'll play good soccer. You'll get good looks and probably get a better scholarship after you leave here. So that's kind of what I've seen in the junior college, right? The academic side, again, I agree with Pep, is we get, you know, the classes are the same. And I think for us, it's changed. Like when I first started, we were going for, I would like to say, the not so smart kids, because we're like, oh, okay, you got the GPA. And this is, we're talking 15 plus years ago. Now I think that it's, at least on the women's side, they're a little smarter. They're like, I can spend $5,000 and go to school at a JUCO, or, you know, or come here to Monroe, or $20,000 and go to the 4-year. I'll go the first 2 years, I'll spend $10,000. It's better than 40 for the first 2 years. I save money that way. So we're getting the smarter kids anyways. Now that I say the past 6-7 years, it's turned to that. The smarter kids now are really being smart about their choices financially and academically. So that's what I've noticed here.
Yeah, no, it's true. And even on the men's side, I know when I, my first junior college gig was probably 20 years ago. And I do remember hearing coaches saying, yeah, I'm just going to look for rosters of kids that don't have any good grades. And those are the ones I'm going to go after, instead of presenting an option to families. I guess the only, Christian, the only thing that I do hear from parents, and I do go, there might be a valid point here, is when they have a kid who's been taking a lot of AP courses, passing a lot of AP exams. So they do have maybe a semester or two semesters worth of college credits already under the belt, or already taking college courses, which happened here in Quincy quite a bit at Feather River, is kids at the local high schools were already taking classes at the junior college. And I can sort of see that point. I can, and I can understand where the parents are coming from. But it takes 60 units to become a junior, folks. So now there is this thing. Why don't you explain for us, Christian, the difference between a qualifier, a partial qualifier, and a non-qualifier, if you can, because you've coached at all levels, just so that parents have and players listening to this have a better idea that, look, you don't even have to stay at a junior college for 2 years. If you're a full qualifier with the NCAA, you can transfer out after 1 year. Explain to everybody how that works, if you would, please, Christian.
Sure. There's a, you know, and there's a number of different things that come into the play as you're going through the recruiting process. And, you know, if you're looking at the NCAA Division I or Division II institutions, and at some level, NAI has its own, you know, academic requirements getting in, it's not quite the same as NCAA, that you have to meet to be immediate eligible. And that's what we're talking about. For you to be immediate eligible at one of these, at an NCAA institution, you have to meet certain requirements as it relates to your GPA, as well as your test scores. And each of them at Division I, Division II have different criteria. So either you're a full qualifier at the time that you graduate from high school, you're a full qualifier, you've met the requirements, you're immediately eligible at one of those institutions, and you're eligible for scholarships. The partial qualifier means that you haven't met all the requirements, so you're not necessarily eligible immediately, but you can still, you know, you still can get some things that, that will come along with it. And the non-qualifier means that you don't meet the requirements to compete at an NCAA Division I or Division II school. So when you talk about, you know, well, we can talk a little bit about what you just said. Maybe a student athlete comes in with so many credit hours already because of AP courses. Great, they're a great academic student. Again, you will use an example here. A student might come in with 12 to 15 hours already. And so now they're only need to be with us for maybe 1 year. So you can still come to us for 1 year. You're probably going to get most of your school for free as it is. But now you get yourself that you transfer and you're in a great situation. You could be getting one full year of playing for us and you're still not got, now you're going to have 3 years of eligibility at that next school. The beauty of that is you might be able to get your master's paid for at that next school because you're so far along on the process. So can you start to think big term in terms of what you're looking for and what you're trying to get? What we try to do with our players, and I know the other coaches are probably doing exactly the same thing. We talk about the golden ticket here. So no matter where you're coming in, whether you're partial qualifier, non-qualifier, or full qualifier, we strive to get our kids to get the AA. The AA is the golden ticket because that puts you automatically eligible wherever you go. So, I mean, that's really what we're striving for. If you're one of these higher academic students, and we're talking about that, you know, you don't necessarily need the AA to be qualifier or to be able to move on as eligible, but it definitely helps in the grand scheme of things in terms of what you're doing. I would like to just share one personal story with my own daughter who is not an athlete. She did not compete intercollegiately. She went to Paradise Valley Community College. She got her degree in biology from us and graduated with Phi Theta Kappa with a high GPA. She applied for scholarships at the University of Northern Arizona, was the only transfer student to get a biology scholarship plus the Phi Theta Kappa scholarship because of her academic rigor that she had at Paradise Valley Community College. She was already meeting everything they wanted, and they saw value in coming from our program and giving her an academic scholarship. And, you know, it's because of the education. But you want to know how much we paid for that first year and a half for her? I paid $1,000 for a year and a half for her to go to community college here. And now she's up at Northern Arizona. My other daughter right now is going to be a senior. She's going to PV for free for the first 3 years or 2 years that she's going to be there.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. And parents, if you want more information on this, you can always reach out to me. Most of it's Googleable, but basically full qualifier means that you've met the NCAA's 16 core course requirements. It means that you've registered and been cleared by the NCAA Eligibility Center
right. Prior
to stepping on campus. So don't think that you can go in, start taking classes and playing and then go, oh, I should have registered for the NCAA Eligibility Center so I can transfer after a year. It's too late. You're going to have to stay there for 2 years now. So all of this has to be set up beforehand to be a full qualifier. I just want to clarify that for everybody so that we don't leave any misconceptions. All right. I want to address another issue, and I don't know everybody's situations. I know I was very lucky at my last junior college that we had dormitories. But I hear from parents, yes, but junior colleges don't have dormitories. Generally, vast majority, true, but there are always solutions to this. Pepe, what's your situation there, or what do you know, or what stories have you heard about how coaches have solved this issue? Not coaches, but how students and families have solved this issue when they're going to a junior college, maybe that isn't right next to home?
Well, we're fortunate. We do have on-campus housing, plenty of it. And they're not dorms. They're actually apartments right on campus. And that is a big advantage for us because I am aware there are junior colleges that don't have it. But the majority of them in our region do have on-campus housing. So that's definitely not an issue for our region.
And Sal, what about your situation? What do you have there?
I'm going to say Herkimer stole our area, the way we do things, because we have on-campus apartments. So I'm just picking on Pepe. We're in the same region. That's why. No, ours are apartments. They are nothing like what I went to college with, where you share a room as big as this office with another guy and then a bathroom with 30 other people down the hallway. At least that's how it was when I went to school. Now they're like, ours is like a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, full kitchen and living room area apartment. I mean, we run a residential camp in the summer, and I don't live too far away from school, and I stay on campus. That's how nice they are. So plus it's a little break from the kids too, for my kids. but they're nice enough to do that. And it's great because they're right on campus. They're walking distance from everything on our campus. It's perfect. And you can't ask for anything more than that kind of experience here at a college, especially at a junior college, having dorms like this. Or I don't see, they yell at me when I call them dorms. They're housing, right? Resident housing, you know? So no, having those apartments is huge.
Right. Adrian, I know you guys don't have dorms, so I'm sure you have kids that are coming in from outside of other areas. How do you deal with that?
So we're not able to arrange housing. But I mean, near campus, there's apartments, and they're really affordable. And I know that we have kids that share a bedroom, share with teammates or teammates from other teams. And I think they pay like 300-ish per month, to share a room. And so it's pretty affordable. I would love to have on-campus housing because that would be way, way easier. But basically, you know, if a kid wants to come from outside the area, I just let them know I can't arrange housing, and they kind of have to go find it on their own, if that makes sense. But there's a lot of athletes here at Delta that across all sports that live, you know, off campus, in apartments, and do it pretty affordably, especially if you have the Pell Grant. And that's another thing that I think is really, really big with going the junior college route, you know, trying to explain to kids and families. We have, I would say, probably 70%+ of our team gets full Pell Grant. And trying to explain to kids and families in the recruiting process that if you're full Pell, that would be the exact same amount of money if you went to University of the Pacific down the street and you're paying, you know, $57,000+ total cost of attendance, you would still get the exact same full Pell Grant as you would coming to Delta paying $46 per unit. And your first year is free here. So you would, you know, collect that full Pell, you know, in year one and not even have to worry about tuition. So, I mean, financially, it's a no-brainer. And, you know, so for kids that get full FAFSA, if they want to come out from outside of the area and they feel that this is a better opportunity for them to earn a scholarship and a better environment for them to develop as a player in person, you know, then that's a decision that they, you know, have to make as a family. But, you know, their full Pell Grant is going to, you know, cover their housing, if that makes sense. So it's definitely doable. And I think that, you know, you solve problems when it's the right opportunity for you and the right fit for you, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Oh, it does. No, it makes complete sense. And I think your situation is probably the most common in the United States. I think what Pepe and Sal have, and what I had, and Christian, do you guys have dorms? But I think we're
very similar, that we are a community college that none of the Arizona community colleges are. Maricopa County Community College, I should say, the ones in Phoenix have housing, but similar situation. We have a number of dorms that are dorms. Apartments are right around campus. I know our baseball team has a number of out-of-state players or out-of-county players, track and field do. Very much the same. We can't help arrange that. But what we do is we put them in touch with the players, are, we know the apartments that are friendly to our athletes, the apartments that allow them to only sign a 10-month lease, these are apartments that are literally, some of them are walking distance to campus, some of them are less than a mile to campus, so they have that opportunity to be there. And again, very similar, you put 2 to 3 people into a apartment together, it's just as affordable as if they were at doing campus housing and what you would be paying equivalent to campus housing.
Yeah, and so it's doable, and that's what I want parents to hear, is that colleges are solving this problem all across the nation one way or the other. So very good. So really one of the other important things is transferring, right? Transferring to a four-year school. Pepe, why don't you talk about, you know, some of the situations maybe that you've come across. Maybe give us a couple of examples about how you've been able to help some kids move on to that four-year level.
Yeah, well, definitely being here 24 years, I've been able to establish a lot of relationships with four-year schools, head coaches, assistant coaches throughout the country. You know, so the exposure that they get in junior college, it's sometimes it's more exposure than they got in high school, you know. And I still go back to how much, you know, some of these kids have to pay just to be on some of these top clubs. And so many that aren't being, you know, seen or recognized. And we're actually starting to come across more of those. So instead of paying all that money for those top clubs, and I'll just use Herkimer example, they come into Herkimer for 2 years, which is very affordable. And then they get great scholarships to move on to great universities. You know, we send players on to Syracuse University and St. John's and UConn and, you know, all over throughout the country. So the opportunities for these kids to get that exposure, sometimes I think it's better at junior college, you know. So I was a junior college player myself. You know, I didn't have the grades coming out of high school. I went 2 years to Herkimer. I matured academically. I matured socially and then got a scholarship to Bowling Green State University out in Ohio. You know, that's, and talking about maturing there, it's, that Bowling Green was 22,000 students there. You know, my first class that I went into was a nutrition class, and there was 300 students in the class. As a freshman, I don't know if I would have been able to handle that, where, you know, they didn't take attendance. They, you know, you really didn't talk to the professor. Funny story is, with that size of a class, is when we had an exam to look up your grade after the exam, we had to go outside of the classroom, look up our social security numbers, and next to it was our grade that we got. You know, that's how it was. But I was able to mature, like I said, as a player and as a person to move on to those 4 year schools. So I think it's a great opportunity for students. And now we all know the cost of 4 year schools is outrageous now. You know, we're getting into 50, 60, 70, some $80,000 a year. So Sal brought up the point, yeah, you got a half ride to an $80,000 a year school, but you're still paying $40,000, you know? So I think that can help us out in the junior college route is too, is, you know, the price of the four-year schools, saving some money on the first 2 years and then moving on to their four-year schools. Because a lot of those students too, they go to a four-year school, you switch your major, you know, and there's an extra semester that you're going to be paying for.
Yeah. Sal, I know you're going to have to step away in a minute because you've got a camp running right now and they're probably screaming for you saying, we need you. But what I wanted to let you be able to kind of wrap up a little bit and maybe talk about that same idea of transferring, if you've got anything you wanted to add to that.
I mean, now same thing as Pepe said, you know, we get those players that, and, you know, as I stated before, they'll transfer in, or I kind of laugh at even parents when they're like, well, they were going D1. And then I think it's more for the parents' sake that their kid, that they can say their kid's going D1. It doesn't matter if it's a guy or girl, rather than looking at the program that they're going to is just more of the status quo type of thing. And you know, now being through the process and being part of the process, I get it. I'm like, I understand what they're saying, but at the same time, it's like, look at all the facts. Is there's a lot of programs like Herkimer, ourselves, even at Paradise Valley, where they have that history. They've got the history of sending their players to a four-year school, and not just any four-year school. if it's a top Power Five conference, or if it's a top, one of the top D2 schools. That's what I think they need to look at and look at the bigger picture. I think for us, we open up a lot of doors, you know, and as Pep said, throughout the years, we've met a lot of coaches, and it's interesting enough. And I'm sure this happens to the coaches on this call as well, is that because they know us and they know the players we develop, they'll call us, say, hey, I need a center mid. What do you have? And just with our recommendation, we can start the conversation, and then they'll want video and all that. So, I mean, those are the things that I think work in our favor with the connections we have, how we push our players on. And it's interestingly enough that a lot of people don't know that about junior college, that we do help our players go on to bigger and better things. You know, as I said, I know Pep's got a bunch of players that's played in the MLS and national teams. And so have I on the women's side. We have those players. They come to us, especially on the international side. And now the international players are coming with budgets where it's more affordable even for them to come to junior college. And they're seeing the benefit of that. They're like, okay, right now I only have A, B, and C schools, but they know that where we've sent other international players, let's say, or where we're sending our players, that we're opening up a bigger door as well and giving them more exposure, because now they have the experience. They get to try it out. As Pep said, you know, as a freshman, they go to a big school. They may not fit in, or they don't have the maturity level. So they come here. It's a little, you know, it's easier transition. They get to feel it. And then they're like, yeah, this is for me. And now they're ready for that bigger school environment. You know, we're about 12,000 students. So we're not a small junior college, a typical junior college. So our classes are not as big as 300. We're still very small, 20 to 25 per class, but it's something where it's nice. It gives them that good transition from us to go to a bigger school.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Sal, I know you got to go, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it, and go have fun at your camp, man.
Thanks. Sorry, they're getting picked up, so I need to make sure that everyone's all good.
So, I love it. Guys, thanks for joining us. Much appreciated. So, you know, I want everybody to understand, all the parents and kids that are listening to this, to understand that if they come into a junior college and if they perform, if they do well in the soccer end, and if they're coachable, if we really, you know, if they get along with the other kids and they get along with everybody, and they get at least a 3.5 GPA, which means, look, you don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be all 4.0s, and you can get the occasional C. But if you can average a 3.5, the commodity now that player is when they're pushing onto a four-year school is very valuable to four-year coaches. I've had kids go on to, I had a girl go to Florida State 1 year. I've had kids go to Penn State and UMass and Lipscomb. You guys can all name, you've heard some of the big schools out there, folks, that some of these coaches have been able to help players move on to. Why? Look, a freshman coming to a four-year coach is still a kid. We don't know how they're going to perform. A lot of freshmen, there's over, between the guys and the girls' side in any given year, there's well over 3,000 kids transferring around through the NCAA, plus the NAIA transferring around, plus the junior college kids coming in. The difference is the junior college kids have proven that they could go to a school, get the grades, play, stay, not just try to school jump because they weren't getting playing time or because they didn't like the coach or whatever. No, they got along in an environment. So a four-year coach now knows that this is a stable student, especially with a good coach's recommendation. We've got film of them playing against other college players. We've got good film, and they've proven that they can do well in the classroom. The value of that commodity is crazy high for a four-year coach. They know that they're going to get an older, more mature player who can get it done in the classroom, on the field, with their teammates, with their coaches. And I want everybody to think about that, please. And I want that to settle in with parents and with kids, because, you know, I find a lot of kids are begging their way onto the bottom of Division One or Division Two rosters, or even Division Three rosters. Please, I'll redshirt. Please just take me. I want to wear that sweatshirt. I want to have that big name. I want to be able to post on Instagram. Whatever the reason is, I don't know, but whatever, they're begging their way onto the bottom of rosters. And maybe instead of doing that, go where you're wanted, go where you can contribute. And I think that's one of the values that junior colleges offers. Christian, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, as you're talking, you talk about it kind of as a commodity, and I get at what we're talking about. Here's the thing that I think is the other piece that you need, that parents need to understand, and the players need to understand. You come and play for me. You come and play for Pep. You come play for Adrian. Yeah, and Sal, we are now going to get to know who you are, the type of person you are, and we are actually going to be able to know, have a better understanding of what the fit is right for you. So maybe at during your junior and senior year in high school, I want to be on that roster. I'm trying to beg to be on that Division One roster. And then you come and you play for us, and we really find, you know what? This is really what the right fit for you is moving down the road. And it might not necessarily be a Division One, but maybe it's a powerhouse Division Two program. Maybe it's, you know, what is it that you really want to major? How many kids change their major in their first 2 years, Pep? I mean, think about that. So you're thinking, this is what I want to do, but my major's changing. Well, I know the school that's going to be a better fit for you from a major standpoint. So not only are you a commodity that's got the grades, you've gotten the experience, you've gotten to play, you're playing at a high level. I now know how to place you in the right place and not just put you anywhere, which is kind of what happens right now. Let's throw a dart and see if I can find a Division One school. We have one young lady that came to us right now. I was actually wanting to try to get her on here, but it didn't work out. But she actually decided she was being courted by Division One. She thought she wanted Division One. COVID hits us. Long story short, she ends up playing for us. And because, you know, we're local, mom wasn't sure what was happening with all the COVID stuff. Now this young lady was a first team All-American, playing the first year with us. I already have 4 top 10 division schools wanting to talk to her, and we're setting up those conversations. She's coming back to play for us, but she's already set the table for her just because of doing the right thing and coming to us. But my discussions and sitting down with her about what she really wants and what she really understands, and talking to her about what I've seen, she says, Coach, I don't want to play Division One anymore. Now that she's been exposed to other options, she's seeing, hey, a Division II school where Division II is based on the idea of balance. That's their motto, right? Division II's motto is the balance. They're literally, she's looking at, and we're talking top 10 Division II programs that can compete anywhere. So, you know, I think that's part of what you're saying is it's just not honing everything. It's also having a mentor or a guide that knows the market. As I say, I tell everybody, I've got connections from the East Coast to the West Coast, from the Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico. And if players really wanted to go to the UK, I could probably get them to the UK also in some type of program. So it's really not just about honing yourself and developing yourself. It's also having someone that wants to help you get to the next level, and which is the right level and the right fit for you.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap this thing up, but I want to just go right around. Adrian, I'm going to start with you. If there's anything you want to add to this, please jump in. And then you are on social media. And I know that one of the reasons why I wanted all you guys on is I know that parents have questions about this process, that you're happy to answer questions and you're happy to jump in because you guys are all in us for the right reasons. And that's for the kids. Adrian?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I would say for me, I think the coolest part about going the junior college route and and then also like being a junior college coach, I think it's the most pure level, really. I mean, soccer in this country is very, very much pay to play. I mean, at the Division III junior colleges, we don't have scholarship money. So, you know, oftentimes once kids get to Division I, Division II, NAI, then the pay-to-play kind of reverses, but it's the same song, different verse, right? It's still pay-to-play, just in a different way. And, you know, it's very transactional. I don't feel that here. I don't think that the junior college level is transactional. It's the opposite. And it's the most pure way, I think, for a kid to come in and really earn a scholarship. You're obviously betting on yourself going to a community college, and you're also betting on your coaching staff. But, you know, truly these kids come in and it's about self-development. It's about focusing on themselves as a player, as a person, as a student, and they have that environment with people that truly care about them. You know, the other side of it too is, you know, I'm a full-time tenured faculty member. I'm not going to lose my job if we had a bad season. You know, so the pressure that is on some of these Division I, Division II coaches, you know, that are in a contract year, I think leads people to do things that maybe they wouldn't normally do.
Right.
And way that they wouldn't normally act. I don't think it's right, but also that's a pressure that I don't experience here. The pressure that I experienced here is because I'm very competitive and I want to be the best at everything that I do. And I want my players to be the best, you know, at everything that they do. But that's self-imposed pressure. And so, you know, like I said, I think it's just a very much more of a pure, you know, level and pure relationships that are like truly based on the foundation of, like, for me, loving my players, caring about them and wanting them to transfer, you know, find the right fit and be great, you know, and strong women in their lives. So, you know, I think for me, that's why I do it. I really want to develop strong women. And so I would definitely say, you know, as a parent, look for an environment where that fits, you know, what you're looking for your child to, you know, experience for 2 years or for 4 years. I think it's really important. So, but yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions. My DMs are open on Twitter. And yeah, I'm happy to be a resource for parents and athletes.
Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate it. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Don.
No, absolutely. Christian, I'll let you kind of wrap up your end of it.
Yeah. So again, I'm here to answer any questions, to speak. I actually ran into Don at the convention, said, "Don, we really need to talk about the junior college. I've got some colleagues that, you know, and everything. Let's bring them all together and let's talk about and dispel some of these myths as it relates to the junior college recruiting. You know, the coaches here have been in the junior college ranks for a majority of their career. As I said, most of my career is at 4 year and now at the junior college. And I'm really seeing the value of what the junior college is. And I love the way that Adrian, you know, put it in terms of this is the most pure form. And, you know, she says it's, you know, other programs are, it's more like transactional. Junior college soccer is transformational. It truly is transformational because we're at a point with these young men and women that they are really trying to find who they are. And at the junior college level, they're not going to get lost in the shuffle. They're not going to get lost in the numbers. We are truly here to help them. Our number one core value where I'm at is a pathway to progress. We want to understand where you're at, where you want to go, and give you a clear pathway for that to happen. And that's not happening when you're a junior and senior high school, because you don't even know what that looks like yet. So I think that's, you know, to go beyond being not transactional, let's really shape it. It is transformational. And so we really want to help that transformation happen. From parents, I am, you know, Paradise Valley Community College. We have a Facebook page. You can come there and reach out to me, or can reach out to me, you know, on Facebook with even at Christian DeVries. I am really, really active on Don's group. If that's where you want to ask the question, tag me on there. Don's tagged me as an expert within their group. I will be glad to answer any questions as it relates to junior college, actually to recruiting and understanding the, you know, what the four-year world is versus the two-year world and how that works. You can reach out to me that way. On Instagram, you know, kids want to reach out to me on Instagram. That's great. Unfortunately, I'm not a Twitter guy. I know I should probably be a Twitter guy, but I just never really got there. And then, you know, if coaches are listening, you know, again, LinkedIn is a great place to reach out to me if you want to reach out to me there. Or worst case scenario, go to Paradise Valley Community College website, Go Pumas, and you can find me at gopumas.com. And I'll be glad to answer any questions people have about this entire process of understanding what it means to be in the junior college. And it's not a step down. In my opinion, it's your step up to your next level.
Thank you so much. Hey, Pepe, why don't you let us know where people can reach you and anything else you want to say to wrap this up?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So again, I'd be open for any questions. Adrian put it spot on when she used the word pure coaching. And I'm in the same position too, where I'm full-time faculty here, where our livelihood doesn't depend on our records, and which I think leads to better relationships with your players. When you're at a Division I, Division II school and your livelihood does depend on your record, I think it leads to more of a business type of relationship. For us, we're able to, because we don't have that pressure. And like Adrian said, it is self-imposed because we're so competitive. But it does lead to, I think, better relationships with our players because of not that added stress, you know. And like you said, Don, it is about the players, you know, for all of us. That's why we're doing this. And, you know, at our level, there's no doubt in college, coaching junior college is the most challenging of all the levels of college. So
I agree with that.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that. Yeah.
So I'm right on there with Adrian's comments and Christian's comments on that.
I appreciate it. And Sal was able to pop right back. So I'll let you kind of wrap it up and let people know where they can get a hold of you and answer any questions, or you can ask, they can ask you any questions that they need answered, Sal.
Yeah, they can reach me if they go to our mcctribunes.com webpage and go to women's soccer. We've got an Instagram page at Monroe CCW Soccer. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram as well, so they can find me on all that if they have any questions. They're always free. I've been on a couple panels with Christian for his camp stuff to talk about the recruiting process and all that. But again, I'm a full-time faculty and staff with like Pepe is, and it's, you know, that's our winning is not, it's self-inflicted, I guess. That's what the stress for that is. It's self-inflicted for us. It's not a pressure from the school to win. It's just, this is how, you know, we are competitors in nature. That's why we're in this business as well, but also to produce and help them get to the next level. I think that that's for us, it's about player development, you know, and that's never, I think that that's a key thing for us.
No, I really appreciate that perspective. So parents, players, listen, just like not all Division I schools are created equal, or Division II schools or NAIA, not all junior colleges are equal too. Of course, we have coaches that are very part-timers and almost absentee and just do the season in junior college. But I know Division I coaches, NCAA Division I coaches, who kind of act like that too. Where it's just about the season and getting it done, and they just do the bare minimum. So please do your homework. At least you all know that you've been introduced to four coaches that are doing it the right way. And I can guarantee you, parents and players, there's quite a few coaches around the country. I was going to say in the hundreds. Yeah, probably true. That care about the kids that are trying to do it the right way, knowing that there's over 600 men's and women's programs.